Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation, a monthly podcast that focuses on the ministry of faith formation with children, youth, and families in ELCA congregations. Our goal is to engage in conversations that strengthen and empower your ministry world. This podcast is produced by the ELCA Youth Ministry Network. Hey everyone, it's Elizabeth. We are fresh off of the 2020 ELCA Youth Ministry Network extravaganza that happened in Anaheim. And when we were there, we had a bunch of great conversations. We recorded some podcasts that we'll be sharing with you over the next several months. And today we're excited to share the conversation that we had with Joe Davis and Dave Scherer. We hope you enjoy.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a little loud.
Do something fun.
It's really loud. That's a little too loud.
What's up? You can't wreck this cozy reckless angels and ancestors, God and protect us. Love and hate etched on the brass knuckles, cause we down with the rah-rah ruckus. Suckers, butters, behind us Ghani and Muhammad Ali, who taught me how to bob and weave outside of the ring. How to fly and sting with Alney wings, with Dr. X, Malcolm King, dreams by any means.
Which means
both teams are united as one. We'll live and die by the gun, but by the beat of my drum. When I'm weak, I'm strong, so I can keep it known. The sirens might come, but they can't silence my song.
Yeah. I didn't want to keep going. Sorry, that was already too long.
That's awesome. We've never started our podcast with some spoken word beatboxing before. So thank you for that.
Because you've never had Joe Davis and Agape
on
the show before. That's
true.
How we do.
But we can't say that anymore because now we got Joe Davis and Agape. Welcome, guys. The Third Tuesday team is super excited to have you on our lineup for the weekend. Before we jump into our topic for today, which is loosely a topic, say for our listening audience who you are and where you hail from and whatever you want to tell us about you, and then we'll talk a little bit more later about the work that you're up to.
Cool. My name is Joe Davis. My preferred personal pronouns are he, him, his.
Oh, I'm Dave Scherer, he, him, his.
Yeah, and we're artists, theologians, and educators who travel across the country doing intercultural work with individuals and organizations who want to practice inclusivity.
He's giving our speech.
Is that on your website?
This is part of our main stage speech. That's how we started.
We're just using you as a guinea pig.
All right.
This is is one of those weird things, though, because you're saying it before. Right now you're saying it before your thing.
Right.
But then people will be hearing this after
exactly.
This. Oh. It's all sort of like an inception sort of.
So I have to pretend
inception,
like I.
That's good. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Tuesday. I'm so glad today's Tuesday. I was recycling this morning.
Yeah.
I was watching, what's the shows on Tuesday nights?
This Is Us.
This Is Us. I watched that today.
Yeah. That's the only show I know.
Yeah, we just love Tuesdays. Tuesdays are the best.
Yeah. So
especially
glad.
The
Happy
third
Tuesday.
Yeah. Yes. I have a particular affinity for the third
Absolutely.
Tuesday of the month.
Yeah, it's my favorite one out of all the Tuesdays.
Sweet. Okay, minus the resume introduction of the two of you. Who are you actually as real people and children of God? About your family or your whatever you want to tell us about that isn't on your website.
Dave Scherer, I think things to know about me. Three things.
That is the beginning of your workshop. Also not that. Okay.
We have a
thing
that you wouldn't know about us by looking at us also.
All right, okay, something else. I guess what I can say is that I like to run and that I have decided in my life, okay, this sounds workshoppy, but I'm going to do it anyway. One of the things I figured out about myself, and it was on a run, so I'm bringing it all together, is that my job on this planet, my work on this planet, is to dismantle racism and other systems of oppression in the Lutheran Church. And that was kind of like a big breakthrough for me because I'm a 7 on the Enneagram. 7s like to do everything.
Me too. I'm a 7 too.
We like to do all the things. And so to just say, no, you know what? I'm going to focus and steward my work and my time in this area has been really liberating for me recently. So that's what I'm excited about these days.
Word, word. I feel it. Yeah, so Joe Davis, man, what? I just, man, she's gonna kill me for this, but like, I'm super duper love my wife so much. I'm like, she, like, been married, like, coming on the first year of my marriage, but we've been together for 6 years. So,
she loves to be the center of attention.
She hates to be the center of the attention. And I don't think she's, I'm not even gonna tell her about this. She's never gonna know. She might just stumble upon this podcast.
Lots of people just about to blow up. Stumble upon Third Tuesday Conversation. Oh,
no. Yeah, no, I, because when you talk about like what makes me excited, what am I passionate about? Like, I'm a lover and I adore my wife. Yeah, and then like, you know, new marriage too, so it's beautiful. And what else? I'm an artist, and I feel like my life's work is around healing. I care deeply about healing. I want to contribute to the healing of the whole world, and I think the best way for me to do that is to work on my own inner healing and to heal from my own trauma and my own woundedness and dismantling the ways that I carry around, like, patriarchy, that I carry around, you know, these systems of oppression within my body, and how can I develop better practices where I'm not perpetuating the woundedness, but I'm contributing to the healing of the world. That's my personal commitment, and I think I like to do that through art, through poetry, through music, through dance and theater. Make more space for that, for myself and for others. So.
Okay, Dane, can I change my answer? I didn't know he was going to be all articulate like
that's
that.
That's just what it is.
Dang, man, trying yes, to outdo me.
Nah,
man.
Yours was great, too. What are you talking about? That was beautiful. Gosh. We need more white people saying they're going to dismantle racism. Like, you
know,
don't hear that
you
enough.
You located in your own body. Oh. Like, you got deeper with it.
Here, okay, you can have a do-over or an add-on.
No, what he said. That's, I want his Ditto. Answer. I want his answer.
That's good.
Sweet. So, if it's okay, Dave and I had a conversation after the extravaganza last year about some of the work that he's up to. And talking about you being Agape and doing that art form and having some brave conversations with people of color who said, hey, great job. However, there's more. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about those brave conversations and then also how this partnership has deepened as a result of those brave conversations. Yeah. So maybe start there with that brave conversation and then how the two of you got together doing the work that you're doing.
Yeah, so growing up, you know, I was, I still am, able-bodied, cishet, white, straight, dude, Christian, tall. And so everywhere I went, I was told that, like, my voice mattered, I was important. So, and it kind of gave me some audacity to feel like I could just, and so, like, my wife, who's not a white, or who's not a male, would be like, wait, so you're just gonna go to like rural Iowa and go try to convince all of them to do hip hop dancing? Like, what makes you think that you can do that? And I'm like, cause I can. Like, and so I think that, you know, I didn't really always realize the privilege that I had to just walk into any church, to almost any Lutheran church in America and just like be as comfortable as I wanted to be and take up as much space as I wanted to take up. And one of the conversations I had was with a friend who said, Dave, the reason you're able to do that is because people of color, women, queer siblings, they're shouldering the discomfort in the room. Mm. And the reason you're able to be so comfortable. So that was the first one. But another one that really hit me was another friend said it maybe even a little bit more plainly. He was like, and he's now Bishop of Chicago Metro Synod. But he said to me, he said, Dave, like, you're a white dude doing hip hop. Like, the spirit of hip hop started with, you know, empowering people of color. That's the whole reason hip hop exists, is to like empower people of color, give them a voice. What are you doing with your ministry to do that? You're not. And that's racist. Yeah, he used the R word on me. And it was like a Holy Spirit gut punch. And I was just like, ugh. In fact, it was in Anaheim 4 years ago. Was that 4 years ago or 3 years ago?
Three, yeah.
So basically I knew that I needed to do something about what he was saying. And so basically what we decided was that from now on in my ministry that I was going to make an intentional effort to always have younger people of color that would be with me. At first, I was ready to just run away. I was like, I'm done with this. I need to make more space. But what I realized through conversation, through other kind of revelations, was that the door was actually probably just going to slam behind me. If I just left, like, all right, I'm done. It wasn't like they were going to be like, oh, like they were going to be like, okay, well, we'll just get like other white guys who strum guitars instead of white guys who do hip hop. At least that's kind of what the experience I've had. So I realized I needed to stand in the gap in some ways, and I needed to find ways to empower other artists. So basically we started writing into the contract, Dave will always have a younger person of color. People didn't understand that. They're like, well, we just want you. Why do we want other people? It's like, well, this is, if you want hip hop, this is part of hip hop. Mm-hmm. And you can't separate them. And I think a lot of the audiences that I perform at, they love hip hop, but they don't love the people that created hip hop. And I'm like, you can't engage in hip hop and not, and hate people of color or not, listen to the experience or celebrate that experience. So that's when Joe and I started working very intentionally together. And I can let you take it from here, but it's just been a real blessing to work with him, because I was super scared to like have another person, because I'm like, he's younger than me, he's better looking than me, and people are gonna like him more than me, and how am I gonna pay my bills, yada yada. And then what happened instead was that God like met us on the other end with like more abundance than what, you know, than I could ever see. Not like financial abundance, but you know what I mean? Like the things that we do together now are things I never was able to do on my own. People are like, you've gotten so much better. No, I didn't get better, but we're better together. So
yeah.
That's been a blessing. So, and the last thing I just wanted to say about that was that, like it started out as like, yeah, this is the right thing to do, you know? But it morphed quickly into like, I need you, Joe. Like we are an act now and I can't do this without you. I tried to do a show recently. Joe couldn't make it. I usually have like three or four others that join me. When Joe can't make it, nobody could make it. It was just me. I said I was never going to be just the lone white guy standing on the stage, but I was. Don't tell your heel that. But no. And so
he's a regular listener of 3TC. So you just did. I'm just
teasing. But basically, I was like,
calling him up after this episode.
No, but I realized I couldn't do it by myself, and so that was a revelation. Just like, we need each other.
That's real. Nah, you spoke on what needed to be spoken on, and it's really our experience. I think we have to do this work together. I'm a firm believer that there's some work we got to do, like in our own individual, like, yes, affinity groups and our racial and ethnic groups. There's a unique and a particular type of healing that occurs when that happens. But also, if we want collective liberation, collective healing, we need the collective. One of my mentors said that if people of color could have ended white supremacy by ourselves, we would have done it by now. And so, like, we got to have these partnerships, these collaborations, and that's really what's going to make it work. So, and I'm grateful to be able to do this work with one of my best friends. So, the friendship has grown over the years, and I really, it's just been profoundly healing and transformational for me to do it with you. So I'm grateful for that.
Me too.
Yeah.
So in addition to the art that you create together, mm-hmm, what other work are you up to in congregations doing racial healing? I know that there's a tool that you're trained in, the intercultural development inventory. Mm-hmm. So I know that that's a part of it, but could you say more about the work that you're up to in congregations in facilitating real conversation but healing conversations as well? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing before we get into that is to like just tell people, because a lot of us, we want to check the box, or we want like, oh, just give me the silver bullet, the thing that's going to dismantle white supremacy in the world or in my church or whatever. And that's not, unfortunately, how it works. It's an ongoing thing. But Joe and I, we've identified a few things that can be next faithful steps for people. So one thing we've done, we've facilitated like weekend long retreats that have been really powerful for people. Again, a lot of it's just planting seeds. We're trying to train trainers, so to speak, but, we've journeyed with congregations for like year long, kind of consulting gigs where we're trying to check in with them, you know, and create a process together so that we can move forward and in this practice. And we've done, we did a Reformation remix tour over the last few years that it is trying to get people to have more dialogue around things that are uncomfortable. So this IDI tool, I'll let Joe talk about it, but I think it's, I've really fallen in love with it in many ways. What do you like about IDI?
Yeah, I love that it's developmental. And so, like you said, it's talking about taking those next most faithful and fruitful steps. It's not like you're gonna, you gotta train, you gotta practice as a process. And so many times we want to plant the seed and eat the fruit the same day.
Yeah.
And it's not about that. It's about planting the seed, cultivating the soil, like really taking that time to tend to yourself and looking at how you respond to sameness and difference, cultural sameness and cultural difference. And that takes a lot of time and intentionality. And so it creates more space to have these learning opportunities where you can grow and develop. That's what I love about it, because there's a lot of grace in it, a lot of compassion in it. And even for me, like, there's an entry point for anybody and everybody, wherever you are on the journey, to like figure out your own stuff and how to continue to move forward. So, yeah.
I just want to go quick back to Dave, you used the word gut punch about that moment. And I want to ask you about how you, excuse me, how you navigate those gut punch moments for the people that you're working with. That, because like you said, it can be a shutdown moment. It can be an anger moment. Mm. It doesn't always happen that the gut punch moment is a moment of self-realization that's like, I want to help dismantle white supremacy, you know? So how are you encountering that in the work that you're doing, and how do you navigate those gut punch moments to really get the most fruitful thing out of it, or at least start going in that direction?
I think one thing that's been like groundbreaking for me, Joe and I have fallen in love with the work of this guy named Rezma Menakem. He wrote a book called My Grandmother's Hands, and he locates a lot of our racialized stress responses in the body. And so it's been super helpful for me to give people that language, because he talks about the vagus nerve and how a lot of these messages that we carry around race, they bypass our conscious thought. And so really, these things that are stored in my body, when I'm feeling threatened, those are that's what comes out, right? And so, I think people, for them to like just have that awareness and go, okay, he wanted to start talking about race, and I'm like literally wanting to run the other way inside of me. I'm freaking out. I'm either getting like super worked up, or I'm collapsing, and I'm just, you know, but then to give that language to people and just say, okay, there's no bad, wrong feelings. This is just like how you're responding. So what are you feeling? Where are you feeling it? And just giving them some language to be like, okay, I'm starting to feel tightness in my chest when we talk about this. Okay, that's not bad. That's just what's happening. So how are you going to regulate your nervous system so that you can stay in this conversation? And Joe and I call it holy discomfort. You know, how can you stay in that holy discomfort, and allow God to meet you in that place and provide healing?
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I love this work, you know, when it's centered on the body, is because I've found that a lot of times I've been asking white folks to do something that they literally don't have the capacity in their nervous systems to do yet, right? And so when we're able to locate it in our bodies, and there's this increased awareness of what's happening, then you can, as Rezma would say, you can get your reps in. And you can continue to engage in that work till you develop the capacity to stay in those conversations and stay in those relationships. But it comes back to practice, right? I think that's the perfect theme for this, because that's such a huge life lesson, especially when doing this work. Because the reason why we're not good at having these conversations and we're not good at doing this work is because we haven't got our reps in. We haven't practiced. We've like checked out because of the nervous system, the bodily responses that happen. But once we're aware that that's happening, we can say, okay, I feel it. I'm going to stick with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to lean into that holy discomfort and keep coming back to it. Maybe I can't stay as long as I want to. Maybe I can stay just a breath longer than I did last time.
Yes.
And I'll stay there. Okay, I did it. That's enough for today. Maybe I'll come back and do it again. We got to keep developing that capacity till we can all hold this thing together. So,
and one thing he talks about is that, like, especially white folks don't really have, like cultural, he calls it like cultural coherence, something that holds us together in this work, so that, you know, when I'm in the meeting and I'm like pooping in the punch bowl, you know, saying like, hey, why did that video we just put out, like, never name that person's sexual orientation, even though, like, that's like a really important part of their story, but we were kowtowing to donors and things like that. And like everyone else is like, I don't know this guy. Cricket, silence. How can we build resiliency together to, you know, to piggyback on each other, especially so it's not always on people of color or folks with marginalized identities to be the ones who are shouldering the discomfort. Like, black folks are A-plus students at feeling discomfort. Yeah. You know, they have to do it every day. White people are D students when it comes to feeling any sort of discomfort. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, what Resma talks about, is that black bodies have actually been trained to comfort white bodies, because when white bodies are not comfortable, bad things happen, you know, historically. And so we're all in this dance together. So we have to be aware that that's what's happening.
And I think sometimes it's easy to feel the expectation that we need to be out here right away, you know, that like you said, getting the reps in, it's important to keep practicing, and no one's expecting you to be perfect right now, but at least to be doing the work and to be aware of what it's causing within you is the important work where you can sit right now and keep getting the reps in. That's, I like that language around, you know, because I think it's easy to feel that the expectation is that I'm out here already and I can't be there if I'm still back here feeling scared or uncomfortable or something like that, because, you know, I don't have the capacity to get there. Mm-hmm. This says, all right, feel the discomfort. Where is it coming from? And sit there. But then, you know, keep pushing forward. Yeah. Keep going that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We always say you can't be held responsible for thoughts and experiences you haven't had yet. And we don't, in IDI, that's not what we do. So, I mean, then once you learn, you can do better. But if you understand it as like, it's not about a person who, you know, hates other people, but you see it as a person participating in systems, often like unwittingly, right? If you can redefine it that way, then people are more receptive. Like when my friend calls me racist, I can be like, okay, that means like I'm not a horrible person, but that was racist, right? Let me work on being anti-racist now. So there's more receptivity to grow. You know?
Yeah, like racism is a system, but it also lives in our bodies. So like, I can even think about like patriarchy, for instance. Like I can intellectually be like, man, I love my wife. I adore my wife, like I said before. And my mom, like my sister, I've been taught to honor and respect women. I can say those things and think those things and feel those things. And yet my body can still move in ways that are harmful to women. Like, it can take up more space and can, you know, kind of cause them to shrink in ways that aren't healthy. And so that's what it is when you talk about racism as well. We can want to be good, you know, people and say all the right things, but it's still going to function. So how do we recognize when we're navigating in that way that's harmful to others and develop new behavioral patterns around that?
Yeah. So, in talking about our bodies, mm-hmm. right now, my palms are sweaty,
yeah.
and my heart's beating kind of hard, mm-hmm. and I'm an Enneagram 1, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I like to be perfect before I do anything, mm-hmm. and so I don't have conversations like this, mm-hmm. and for me too, even as a Christian public leader, I would feel like I would really need to have some things figured out before I broached any sort of subject in my leadership in church, right? And so just even for me as an individual human, like, where do I even start from? Like, how do I stop with the sweaty palms? And what do we do? What's practically, what do I do to begin on this journey?
Well, first of all, like, perfection is one of the lies of white supremacy, is that you have to have it all nailed. I mean, my neighbor across the street, you know, 16 years old, struggling with eating disorders and things like that. I mean, that's that perfectionism that white supremacy, has produced. And, so first of all, don't buy that lie. It's not true.
Just to connect with that piece is like, I know you're going to go into another piece, but no, I was going to say, like, we've already been messing up, like, for a really, really long time, and we're going to continue to mess up. The only way we can disrupt that pattern is if we at least try. So it's either, like, being active and, like, just let the let us keep messing up, or at least put forward an effort to develop new patterns. Mm-hmm. So like, don't allow that fear, because it's already like, you know, there's already imperfection in the system and the ways we behave, the ways we interact with each other.
Right.
So how can we change that narrative by doing something different? So
yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the, I mean, there are so many lies in the system. But one of those lies is, yeah, that you don't have what it takes. You can mm-hmm. never do this.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, you know, empowered by God's grace, you know, how do you just talk from where you are, mm-hmm. and trust that, that what you're saying, I mean, cause that's, I think people always come up and they're like, okay, we're going to ask Joe, cause Joe's the only one who can, you know, speak about race, cause, you know, white people aren't having a racialized experience. Truth is, you already are. So what you can do is name your own experience, start to get better at identifying what your experience is as a white body person, and mm-hmm. come from that place, so that white folks can help white folks in some of this work and not have to always be like, hey, can you be my black expert?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's exhausting. And I even think about that with patriarchy too. Like, I don't need to always ask my wife or any of my female friends what I need to do as a dude to like lessen the load on them. Like, I can figure some of that stuff out myself.
Yeah.
Like, I can, you know, I have common sense. I'm a human being. And so, like, yeah, working with other men on our healing and ways that we can, like, you know, share some of this load is better. And like, even when I think about the intercultural development inventory, we always have those learning opportunities where we tell people to start with, like, what's something that you already do? Maybe you're already engaged in, like, a reading group, or maybe you like to go to the movies and go to plays or something, but be intentional about, like, what types of films are you watching? What type of plays are you watching? What type of books are you reading that's going to stretch you and grow you? Like, start with something that you're already doing and be intentional around shaping that to allow it to be an intercultural immersive experience.
And I guess what I would say to you is also, like, have you ever really screwed up, like said the wrong thing, done the wrong thing, and then had somebody call you out, feel like crap, and then eventually get restored with grace and live to tell about it? Cause like, that's a really important part of this journey. You know what I mean? And then you're like, okay, what happened? Okay, I didn't die. It was super embarrassing, but I'm still here, and I didn't make it about me. Instead of going into my own shame spiral, I made it about the person who had been harmed. And I tried to make it better. And I lived to tell about it, and now I can get better and better at it, rather than just, cause then it's all about you. If you're just like, I have to get this perfect, then it's not even about the person who's being harmed in the first place,
right,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, so we got this. We got what it takes.
Yeah.
We can make it happen. We're making it happen right now. Even this conversation is like part of us making it happen. So, yeah.
I think that the part of the IDI that you kind of touched on is like, it's so permission giving.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
you start where you are. You don't have to start at perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to just live into, this is where I am, mm-hmm. and this is where I perceive myself mm-hmm. to be, but also like the direction I want to move in,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
to have concrete steps
yes.
in making, they're not huge either, right? Like small things like what media are you consuming? What books are you reading? What movies are you going to? What shops are you frequenting?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to chains, or are you going to immigrant owned? I mean, just
mm-hmm.
the ways that you use your money, your space, your time, all of those things aren't about having the conversation that's going to change white supremacy in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how do you show up mm-hmm. in a white body that isn't about having it all together or right or perfect, but that there is movement. And I appreciate that about the IDI in the work that I've done with it a little bit, like a year in, and I'm still feeling like, okay, Robin DiAngelo talks about flipping the mattress. Like I've flipped the mattress. It's in order to accommodate my growth. I had to flip the mattress to say, I can't return to the divot I have been comfortable in, and it doesn't feel quite right, but I know that eventually if I keep moving myself around and continue to grow, that that mattress will feel less lumpy and less uncomfortable the more I practice. But also the other thing that's interesting to me is that I love that analogy, but I also want to pay attention to if I flip the mattress, I'm still in the same house. The stuff around me is still the same. And so it's not just about, it starts with me, right? But like, what's hanging on my metaphorical walls? What door do I enter through, metaphorically speaking? Like, how is it that I not only flip the mattress and do the hard work in myself, but start to pay attention to the things that got my mattress to feel the way it did in the first place?
Structure of the house.
Yeah.
How you start to shift that structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you kind of touched on the day when you talked about those community of practices and those building culture. Because that's like even community organizing is in that too. Like when it's not just about the individual, it's about the group and how we creating sustainable cultural shifts that are going to impact generations to come. That's like the long-term work. So like the more you're really being intentional and digging deep into your own personal practice, you're able to do that with other folks too, then you can really start to shift that the structure of that house. I think that's why the church is such a perfectly positioned to do that work. We already gather regularly. We already have like a long history of traditions and rituals. Like if we approach that with like the intentionality of dismantling oppressive systems, we can really do some powerful work.
And I didn't really even know the extent of your journey over the last year, and that just tells me that like this is isolating. That's another thing of white supremacy is isolating. And so we need each other to, like, I get strength hearing your story. Like, I love to hear when people are kind of waking up, and I'm still in my journey of waking up, and we just need to keep sharing those stories with each other. And that's what Resma says, that culture eats strategy for breakfast. So so getting those cultural practices together is really important. I'm a part of a group that does we use like the recovery model, but we also use this somatic skill building of checking in with our bodies and sharing stories around white supremacy. And so I know that I have five other dudes, it's all white dudes, that those white dudes are there for me when I'm like going through it. I can rely on them as well.
I think that's an important part of the conversation though, is that like what you touched on before, Joe, is like, it's not people of color's job to do our white work. Like, we need to take a hard look in the mirror and say, what parts of this do I benefit from? Do I contribute to? Have I never seen before? And to not have to come up to Joe after a workshop and say, so, from your experience showing up in black skin, how does my behavior doing this affect you? Like, do your own shit. And don't make it be the extra burden on those who have already been burdened by our shit.
And also, you have to take in consideration the level of relationship too, right?
Yes.
Because like Dave and I have a certain relationship where we're really authentic and candid with each other, and sometimes we can ask each other those questions that I wouldn't necessarily want to have some of the conversations that I have with Dave with other people. And Dave can maybe have those conversations with them instead. You know what I mean? So you gotta take in mind, like, what's your level of relationship? Does it warrant the amount of questioning that you're asking and stuff? So yeah, that's great. Cool. Yeah.
One of the things that we have started making our tradition on this podcast is to turn to our guests and ask them about, just keeping in mind the audience that this podcast is for, youth ministry directors and volunteers and people who work with young people, and coming from the perspective of the work that you're doing, what is one thing that you would like for this audience of people to know, to hear about the work that they're doing, or about the young, or about young people, or even if, you know, what is one thing, and I know this is kind of unfair, but one thing you really want the audience to know about the work that they're doing from the perspective of what you are engaging in?
Man, I wish you would have asked us, like, gave me more time to think about this. But
I know, I told you it was unfair. I knew it when I was asking.
No, it's all good. I'm super curious to hear what you would say. But I think one thing that comes to mind is that this work is possible. Like, I say this a lot, but I really mean it. I draw so much strength and resilience from my ancestors and what they've been able to accomplish. Like, man, I wouldn't even exist if not for their sacrifice and how they did everything within their power for me to even be, right? And let alone be as free as I can be right now. And that is a reminder that this work is possible. Like, I look back and see the models, the leaders before me, and who are still folks who are still doing this work right here, right now. And that lets me know this is possible. We can actually do this. We for real have what it takes. We can make it happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I would just say, like, that you have such a power to model God's preferred and promised future for a group of young people that you're working with. And so how are you going to model that? And to really kind of audit your practices and just say, what is the implicit message? Because I'm sure most of the explicit messages are probably, yeah, God loves you, all are welcome. But the implicit messages can potentially be pretty excluding, just based on whatever kind of insider lingo you use, any number of things that can marginalize folks that are already marginalized. So I would just say, if you have somebody that you love and trust, who has a different perspective than you, and you not a transactional thing, but a relational thing, to keep checking in, like, hey, what's it like to be a queer 14-year-old walking into this space? What's it like to be, young kid of color in this church, in this youth group, or a kid who's, you know, neurodiverse or any of these things that's guaranteed in your youth group? There's plenty of difference happening in there. So how can we be mindful of that so we can model that gospel welcome?
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank y'all.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. Your wisdom is very helpful and valuable to us and to our church and the ministry that we do. So thank you so much. And see you next time, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right on. Appreciate y'all. Much love. Much gratitude.
We hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. Before we go, here are a few quick announcements and reminders. Thanks so much to everyone who was a part of this year's extravaganza. It was a great event because you were a part of it. We're going through evaluations now and beginning plans for Extravaganza 2021. Basic information for that event is posted at ext21.org. Put it on your calendar now. For EXT21, we'll also have 7 learning tracks to choose from. 6 are listed on the site, and the 7th is being crowdsourced, which means we're looking for your input and feedback on what that can look like. Go to elcaymnet.org/track, to tell us what you think. Be sure to keep your network app live. We use that to give information and updates year-round. Other network events and items are posted on the calendar, and you can access other network resources like 3TC. At the extravaganza, we began linking people together to be prayer partners, to commit to pray with and for each other. If you still want to be connected with a prayer partner, go to elcaymnet.org/pray and fill out the short form. Finally, the main stage speaker videos from this year's E are being edited now and will be available to members of the network within 2 to 3 weeks. We'll announce when they are ready on social media. Thanks so much for listening. And as always, new podcasts will be released on the 3rd Tuesday of every month. Be sure to subscribe so that you receive them as they come out and share it with your friends. Finally, thanks to Paul Amlin, the 3TC producer, for his work. Have a great week.